Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. April 6, 2007, Friday. We're going to continue on with the free lecture series that normally, as we know, as I said before, costs a lot of money. And you're getting it free on BBS Radio. A lot of new things are starting to happen around here. I'm sure you're aware of that. We're having a good time. Tomorrow night, April, my gosh, the time is going by here. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Steve Barish on. We're going to do a live open mic. Those of you that listen to the radio and the computer, be sure and use the fast chat, which is located at the top part of BBS Radio's website. From last Friday, we set this back always about 2 minutes, so you can kind of get up to speed from the last session that we had. Also, we're going to have more guests. We had Dave Gibson on last Saturday with the SoundHealingCenter.com. He's an amazing guy. He's doing some amazing stuff, and we enjoyed him very much. And we're going to have more people from that in the previous following weeks coming up. So anyway, let's get in there and see what Dr. Bell is up to right now. I think he's ready to rock and
roll. Walk up to Fred Bell and say, this is a table. Fred Bell would realize not only that this is a table, but he'd realize it might be a Victorian table built back in the 15th century, 16th century, or it might be a table from a cave that a caveman built.
Talking about recognition from the brain here.
And he would
identify
it. So
bring you up to speed how it works. Tradition of the brain.
And all these different kinds of things, and that would give him a consortium of time identification and heritage, heritable identification. So I would look into it, you know, not just as a table, but what kind of a table it is and who built it. And I would automatically think and link up whole series of events that took place by human action to create the table in the first place. And this, of course, is the way the bulk of humanity works. And this linking of thoughts together holds thought over a period of time in a dimension with its correlating traditional building blocks to interpret its full meaning at the moment that it's exposed. And this is where you start linking in time with the expression of memory. And, of course, I'm not going to get into it in great detail at this point in time, but as you understand, it has ramifications that once you realize its process, you can free yourself of that process and move out into a space where time is not yet present in the human mind. And this, of course, is the science of time travel. Now, looking back at the human being, we realize that now the human has this child, has objects, has had experiences. We move forward, and the child begins to project into the future a possibility of different kinds of reactions. Through this series of projections the child is presenting itself to, is developed a what we call gut feeling, intuition, these kinds of things, and that part of the brain becomes active. Now we've got three areas of the brain, the intuitive brain area active, the object identification area active, and we've got the possible encounter or personality system area of the brain active. When these three systems become activated, what happens is now by spontaneity, remember we talked about earlier about time as being a spiral earlier on in this tape series, that time doesn't repeat itself. We were talking about Phi and the Great Pyramid. We were talking about Pi, that the timeline is not a circle, but it's a spiral. Then you realize that consciousness, you know, impeding down on these three different galvanized areas of the brain has been a tendency to start projecting a fourth area of the brain. This fourth area, when it's activated, makes the person into a channel, a seer, a mystic, or any of the other kinds of things that are associated with something up and above and beyond the stimuli and experience action of the three-dimensional world that we live in. This, of course, when it's recognized as a possibility and then a reality, becomes a fourth-dimensional or timeless aspect. Now, timeless meaning that time is slowed down in this area, because as you move up in frequency, vibration, and consciousness, time begins to slow. You get up into the consciousness of the solar logos, for example, the one whose being is our whole solar system, and we're just cells inside of cells in his body. Well, you know, he might be just taking a nap in the next 3 billion years for us. So you realize that this is another time link here, but it dispels us of the paradox of the bulk of humanity's consciousness and frees us, at least time-wise, from the bulk of humanity's problems and forms of ignorance that hold us back in our spiritual upward spiral. So now we're starting to talk a little bit more about time travel. And if you remember back previous to this, when I talked about the spirit hitting the body, locking down the shock of it as it enters the chakras, and then the lockdown of the shock, some of it's spent down into the body and trapped. Some of the energy is freed back to the spiritual kingdoms. And hopefully you'll start to put this tape series together, I mean these ideas together, because a tremendous amount of things are being... Now, I could probably maybe consolidate this down a little bit further, but I feel it's necessary for you to present it at a certain level that will give you the freedom to put it together for yourselves, because the way I interpret what I'm saying to you, the listener, and the way you interpret what I'm saying to you could vary. And if I lock it down too quick and too solid, and the configuration becomes too fixed, I think that you'll lose the freedom to interpret and analyze what I've said and deviate with the amount of your own personal interpretation, what's necessary for your own ego and your own spiritual requirements to resolve the bottom line. Back in 1948, there was a reconnaissance plane flown by the Navy over Verdant-Cumberland Valley in back east in Pennsylvania, and it took pictures of a series of crops that had been blighted by locusts. And this is during the time we had these locust plagues. The pictures that were taken of these orchards from a pretty good altitude were then taken to a laboratory, the Homeotronic Naval Laboratory in Newport News, Pennsylvania. In Newport, Pennsylvania. And they were studied and were given to a farmer whose crops had been photographed in a black box, and they were in the black box they put in some insecticide. And the technicians in the laboratory told the farmer to leave the pictures in the box all the time, but every day at a certain time turn a dial on the black box. After 6 weeks went by, every single insect in the orchard had been destroyed by a combination of energy of what was coming from the black box, the picture, and the insecticide that was placed in there. And this, of course, was the beginning of the what we would call psionic energy or scalar wave technology that became, you know, much more prevalent today.
Now, a lot of people don't realize that we were doing this work back in 1947, and then we took this technology and we came up to the irradiators, the Paradyne irradiators, which took the black box technology when we used our black box with our transmitting devices given to us by the Pleiadians. We were able to take this a much further step, and we were able to not only grant wishes but also, you know, or desires or whatever you want to call them. We also used this in the healing effect, and these became powerful, like Hieronymus type generators. Then we took it a step further with the Andromedan technology, and we went into the holographic projection systems, which takes the equivalent of thousands of these Cumberland Valley 1947 black box experiments and combines it into an immediate, intense, instantaneous form of transmission of these thought energies. So I just thought I'd throw that in as an update at this point, because it's very important to understand.
T. Gale and Hieronymus was the one that had applied for patents. It was his system they were experimenting with in 1946. They were issued in 1948, patent number. If you want to call the patent office and see yourself what this is 2,482,773. It's 2,482,773. That patent number is the patent that a lot of our systems equipment at Paradyne operates under the aegis of.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.
Now what we're going to do is I'm going to flip the tape, obviously. So we'll do a quick transposition here from tape A to tape B and keep the energy flowing. And now you'll have 30 minutes of possibly uninterrupted energy into our continuation of this wonderful seminar. So here we go. I have to stand up. My microphone doesn't quite reach it. I love these Sennheiser microphones. They're amazing. These are the classics, the Elvis microphones that we use. They are so much fun. See if Dr. Bell's coming back here now. Sometimes he gets away from us. There he comes. There he is. Spaceship and all. You get the spaceship now. Boo.
The people over at Dow, Dr. William Hale at Dow Chemical, began to research back in the 50s with this energy, and they found that anything that had a cell and consciousness in it put out an electronic field. And of course, we've been into the intimacies of that electronic field, and we talked about the sensitivity of the DNA. Dr. Rickenbach in Germany, back in World War II, had done a lot of research along these lines. And so by the time William Hale had done it at Dow Chemical, it began to be known as a common thing. It was presented to the United States military also, but they weren't really interested in it as a possibility of a beam weapon. The ones that really picked
they
up
are now.
Were the Russians. And I'm sure some of you remember back in 1987 when a 747 Japanese jet flew through this, what appeared to be a hydrogen bomb explosion going off, but there was no explosion. There was no heat, no radiation, but it looked like that. Visually it looked that way up near the North Pole. North of Alaska. And so this energy that killed these insects is something that we work with all of the time, only we don't kill things with it, we heal with it instead. You can work either way naturally with this kind of energy. It's the same energy field that goes into the human body from the soul. It's characterized by the soul, and it enters into the body when the female first gets pregnant with the male sperm. Now, shortly after the pregnancy, the nature of the spirit records a particular vibratory pattern in the soul, and this then galvanizes the iron in the fetus of the embryo, and this galvanic action, remember, of the iron within the red blood cell, which we've already talked about, begins to form by its characteristic energy field what we call fingerprints. Now, at the same time, the Pleiadians and the Greys and the good and the bad, both sides of the extraterrestrials, good or what we call the not-so-good ones, prefer to say that rather than bad, because everything balances itself eventually anyway. But they are both aware of the same type of frequency and identification of a soul. And so as a result, when a Pleiadian family energy field leaves, meaning someone in the Pleiades dies or leaves their body, they're easier to find, whether they go to a Earth body or here on Earth or some other system. They can find them eventually because they know how to look for the essence of the soul that forms the fingerprints. So the human kingdom can recognize the soul by its fingerprint patterns, and the Pleiadians can recognize them before the person is born. So that a lot of times contactees are even found before they're even born on the physical plane because of the vibratory energy field that the mother has around her. Now there's one thing I want to clarify at this point in time, because a lot of people wonder about these grays. You know, are they good or bad? And one thing that I want to say is that they come here. I had one contact with them, and it was uncomfortable for me because I'm not mentally geared to deal with them like somebody like, say, Whitley Strieber is. But the first contact I had with them was about 1980, and the energy hit my head and my consciousness, and it wasn't like a Pleiadian contact. What happened when the energy hit me, it went around and around and around inside my head, and eventually it slowed down after a few days, and I was able to grab the words out of this beam of energy. And what I found out from them was that they are scavengers of energy. The grays go through the galaxies, and they pick up stray or spurious non-harmonic energy and process it into harmonic energy. And if you look at their metabolism and that, you can begin to understand how this is possible. So this does have, they're like, you know, like a jellyfish or a shrimp or a lobster or something at the bottom of the sea. They have a scavenging capability. Now, the thing about the Greys is that because they've done a lot of bio breeding and intergenetic breeding with other things, they have a group oversoul, but they don't have an individual soul or level. So I think one of the things they're trying to do from the human kingdom is to build up a soul where they can have some kind of a hereditary reincarnation like the Pleiadians do or we do or other people. Another thing that's interesting is because they are scavengers, when they were out in the New Mexico area back in the early 40s, late 40s, mid 40s, their energy fields, their plutonium reactors in their spaceships were picking up radio frequency energies. And, of course, these radio energies were over boiling their pot or giving them too much energy and causing a breakdown, which caused a flash inside the ships, which then burned them but brought the ships down intact. It's like a miniature hydrogen bomb going off inside the cockpit of the flying vehicle because of absorbing too much energy from our radiation. So even their power plants for their systems or their spaceships were characteristically absorbing other kinds of energy. Now the Iarguans, which is another group that I work with a little bit, have another purpose here, and they're the alchemists, and they teach man alchemy. For example, in 1947, when Hoffman, working at Sandoz Laboratories in Switzerland, discovered the lysergic acid on the rye mold and had an out-of-body experience, this, because he put this in his body, caused a chemical change and a biochemical change in the body. And so this was necessary because it evolved man's consciousness. This happened to be that he was synthesizing something that could be found naturally in the psilocybin mushroom, but science was not aware of that effect yet in mankind. Now what the the Iarguans do is when they come here, they teach man alchemy to help change the body frequencies by changing their food habits, their nutritional habits, these kinds of things. So they create what's called elixirs, and these elixirs help biochemistry receive the higher vibratory frequency of the human race as it moves on its upward evolution cycle or in its ever-present course around the Pleiades. The Pleiadians, on the other hand, come to us when man's emotions are open and receptive to the fact that we are not alone. When the Pleiadians finish with us, higher races like the Andromedans or the Lyrians come, who are more on the mental plane, who don't have to work through the emotional auspices of the human race. So in each one of these extraterrestrial beings and groups that comes to us comes in a different wave of consciousness for a different purpose. Now, we've already talked about different extraterrestrials, and this comes and goes, and as we talk and move along on a tape series. Now what I'd like to do is talk about the pyramids for a few minutes, quick review on them before we get into the systems, because the patent number, the aforementioned patent number, is the one that I have developed my systems under, and the pyramids, of course, are necessary to get you ready for the systems and the receptor. We've talked in great length on the receptor. Those of you out there that hear the tape series and want to find out which receptor is amicable to your personality, you just call in on the telephone. We have a way of testing people over the telephone. And our number here at Paradigm, by the way, is 714-499-2603. Or you can write to us at 1278 Glenarie, Unit 255, Laguna Beach, California, 92651, which also have the information posted on the different materials. What I want to do now is I want to talk about the pyramids. First of all, the pyridome was the first thing that we developed. And a lot of our stuff was developed by accident. Like I said earlier, I didn't put pyramids on people's heads. Gary Couture did down in his clinic on West Cliff Boulevard when he found out that the pyramid caused people to have higher energy fields. And whenever he tested them by muscle testing or kinesiology, the one that was really hybridized by John Thee at Pasadena, he found that their different people being tested with a pyramid, if they had any different kinds of vitamin leakage, deficiencies in the body here, that the pyramid would always test them strong. So if they were low in vitamin C, pyramid put over that area, vitamin C would test strong. If they were low in vitamin B, they put the pyramid over the area where they tested for vitamin B, they tested strong. And so from that, we were able to derive there were 7 different vibratory rates inside the pyramid that corresponded to all the different vitamins that we'd found. Back in the 70s when we introduced them, of course, the pyridome was a great seller because the greatest drug addict in those days was the American housewife strung out on Valium to the tune of, I don't know how many billion dollars a year the drug sales were at that time. Later on, we introduced the firedome. Now, all of the pyramids weren't developed by you know, perfect calculating and timing. It was all a series of accidents. I would say a controlled series of accidents. When we first, I think I mentioned this earlier, but when we first put the copper on the pyramid, we were trying to stimulate the adrenals, like the Japanese were successful at doing with their copper bracelets. That failed miserably. Then we found we stacked the pyramids over a period of time. These little holes started appearing on the surfaces of the pyramids. These holes had burned off the copper and exposed the gold layer down below. And then we muscle tested again. We found out that they were effective as far as stimulating the adrenals. We developed the radome. We tried to use all kinds of exotic metals, things like platinum, rubidium, and all of the exotic plating materials that you'll find. And finally, some guy suggested that we just try the simplest of the white metals, which is silver, which we tried and worked perfectly. The heat process, of course, was developed accidentally one night when I dropped the pyramid on a stove. The stove burned a hole through the outer plating, exposing the inner plating, and our heating process came into fruition. So it was always a series of accidents that led us to a series of discoveries or successes over a period of time. Now, continuing on here, Pleiadians started getting involved with me about 1977 as far as really looking at my work. Up until then, we were having contacts about who they were, what my soul relationship was, what my purpose on earth was, the validity of their being here, the validity of my acceptance, my friends meeting them, all these kinds of things. About 1977, Sannyasi surprised me by following us. We were in motorhome. We were traveling across New Mexico near the White Sands testing facility south of Los Alamos, and we noticed there were three ships in the sky following us in behind cloud formations. Well, they transmitted our different kinds of information to me, and the main thing that was real interesting was the design of what we call now the irradiator. And the irradiator design was the first real, what I would call, scalar machine that we had. Now, if you were to muscle test with a pyramid, for example, if you were to take a pyramid and place it right side up on your head and test muscle test on it, you would find that you would test out very strong. If you were to turn the pyramid upside down and put it on your head or have somebody hold it muscle test, you'd probably test very weak. And this is because the energy field of the pyramid is reversing itself, not causing a negative problem, making you weaker, but reversing itself. The consciousness is reversing its polarity into the feminine aspect, or the third ray, which we talked about earlier, the intellect ray, and therefore your energy from the physical body is dropped as it goes up into mind. Now, this is not a normal thing. You should test strong both ways, but we are so over-enveloped in positive energy on the masculine side and so under-enveloped in the female negative energy that the human psyche, when confronted with direct, pure amounts of female or negative energy, negative meaning good, which comes directly into the body through the thyroid center, usually tests weak. If you were to take a positive a pyramid and hold it right side up and a negative pyramid and hold it upside down and make a two-dimensional drawing out of them and superimpose the positive with the negative, you end up with a Star of David. And so you can see this implies a synthesis is necessary. And so if you were to wear a pyramid upside down for a great length of time, what you would do is eventually probably become acclimated on the physical plane to the negative energy of it, of the female or the intellectual energy of it. And this is also energies of the mind. And then what would happen is that you would probably be able to test positive and strong with a pyramid upside down on your head. I know over the years of my being conditioned in these energies, that's the way I test presently, is positive or strong that way. So what we did was we developed the irradiator. And if you look in our catalogs and that, you'll see that the irradiator is approximately about 5 feet tall when standing on its own, with some pyramids in the positive position of right side up and some pyramids that are upside down. And if you were to imagine this as each one of these each one of these pyramids generating a field out in front of it of opposite polarity, you would realize right away that you're going to end up with a trapezoid-type waveform coming off of the pyramid, and therefore this trapezoid wave would repeat itself over and over and over again. And this trapezoid wave, of course, is timeless, or it's a scalar wave. The trapezoid wave perpetuates itself through space and through time. Now, in order to power this unit up, if you look at the pictures of the catalog in our self-help catalog, you'll see that the
radiator sits on a thing called a megorb. The megorb has a series of octahedral chambers in it, and these octahedral chambers are positive and negative energy fields, and it creates a neutral zone right down the middle. So it's a pyramid right side up and a pyramid right side down, and there's four of these chambers. These chambers form a mixing function of energy. What you do is you work with the nature spirits to make this mixing energy a possibility. And once this energy, mixing energy, is a possibility, it is then transmitted up the wire that you see in the center to the backside of the radiator, and then transmitted out through the radiator. We have pictures of the scalar waves. Now, only recently have we developed a, first we developed a, what I would call a exposure technique, whereby we would use a time exposure of a camera at night using laser techniques to see the scalar waves. But now through infrared film techniques, we're actually able to photograph the scalar waves even in daylight sometimes. And we do have these pictures now available, which I have not released yet to the public, but are in my slideshows when I do my seminars. You'll be seeing them. Our systems are programmable, and being programmable, it means that you need some form of mental clarity, which I would say, which would be helpful in order to program them. This is another advantage of getting into and understanding the receptor, having experiences with it to build confidence, so that when you get into systems work, you'll have confidence there, because the whole system's energy field is based on self-confidence, because you'll need that in the beginning to see the results, because they're very, very small and minimal at first, but eventually they become very profound, and they become obvious to a lot of people. But in order to begin into the profound state, you have to hold a certain mental clarity and be able to be receptive to the observation to make mental adjustments to the very beginning. Of course, as I said earlier, that when the blood is breathed in through the into the lungs and out through the heart and up through the carotid artery into the brain has got millionths of an inch arterial size, meaning it's much smaller and acts like a strainer. So as the blood comes into the brain, and there's any dirt in it, meaning that there's any kind of pollutants, which everybody has because of the atmosphere, the brain has a tendency to sift out this dirt and this sediment from the brain and the atmosphere and contaminate or slow down the blood flow through the brain. Over a period of years, this becomes a severe problem. As it gets into the base of the brain, of course, it's causing a balance problem. As it gets towards the midbrain, it's causing problems with assimilation and digestion and energy distribution throughout the body. And as it reaches the forebrain, of course, it causes senility. The thing with wearing the pyramids, other than the pyridome now, is it detoxifies this condition and gradually opens up the brain again by removing these debris particles by producing electricity and by electrolysis dissolving them in the brain, sending them down to the liver. Now, when you're wearing pyramids, it causes to happen things like the power dome and the ray dome. The liver can only handle or digest so much information at one time in the form of these negative particles. So what happens is you're able to get a series of headaches over a period of time at first. Once you get past this headache syndrome, you'll find that your brain will start working clearly, and because you've gone through this experience, which is the first negative, which then becomes positive, it'll give you a tremendous confidence when you pursue our systems. When wearing the fire dome, ray dome, or power dome over an extended period of time, especially the power dome, which is the most powerful, and you find yourself getting a headache, remove the pyramid immediately and proceed to drink large amounts of water and try our ester C or other ester Cs that are available on the market, vitamin C in the ester proportions, as we talked about earlier, because this is very effective in helping the liver remove these toxins from the body so that the brain can function properly. Now, getting back to the systems again and staying in the systems, one of the first areas that I find it necessary to start to understand is the area of the nature spirits. And one of the things that the Pleiadians taught me about was the necessity of this. Now, I remember you've heard me mention earlier in the tape series that in the very beginning I was talking about how the Pleiadians spent so much time in horticulture because they believe it's next to, you know, that God could be found in nature as well as in many other places, and it's very evident that God exists through the nature kingdom. Nature spirits occur on different vibratory frequencies. One of the really classic examples that Sumyasi gave me one time years ago was that of the bee. And if you begin to think about it, all the vegetation that's on this earth and all the things that we eat, we require vegetation. Animals require, even if you're a meat eater, the vegetation has to feed the animal that you're going to eat.
without the cooperation of the nature spirits on this planet, especially the devas of the bee kingdom, you would not be able to have any perpetuation of the species of plants. Therefore, we wouldn't be in physical bodies. The bee kingdom is real interesting. Now, if you realize that the output frequencies of a single pyramid, like a ray dome or a power dome, are exerting themselves into the atmosphere and into the environment, and you were to plot this, as I said earlier, you would see a p-orbital design, p-orbital design pattern. Now, if you hook a bunch of these patterns together, and we did this in what's called a pyridine orb, you'll end up forming a lotus field because it's a combination of five pyramids. On page 59 of our catalog, you can see a drawing of it, and you can also find it in the system section of the Death of Ignorance book, which is the latter part of the latter chapters of the book, primarily the last one, actually. And you'll see many pictures in there of different field frequency patterns and how they work. You've got to realize that these patterns and fields are created by the fact that the Earth is rotating through space. It's returning on its own axis 1,000 miles an hour, but at the same time it's receiving direct energies from the sun, the moon, other planets, and of course the stars themselves. And of course the influence of the stars themselves is becoming more apropos to this seminar series because it's having a tremendous profound effect in our consciousness via the etheric chakras, via the endocrine glands, via the hormone constructions, etc. Now what happens is if you get around the bee kingdom, the flowers, and let's say we're going to the clover bees today, okay? The flowers, as the flower starts to pollinate the flower itself out in the fields near the bee, you know, the clover bee hive, the flower starts sending out an energy. It's a scalar wave type energy that flowers put out, and it's felt in the surrounding area. It's a time or a timeless energy, but it is, also has a vibratory frequency. And it begins to generate this particular frequency at a timed rate. You know, energy can be timeless. It can be turned off and on during a period of time. So it generates a certain particular vibratory frequency, a particular lotus frequency that is characteristic of the clover. And meanwhile, back at the hive is like a giant antenna system. And over the hive is an angel that's a vibratory rate. Now, the angel will exist on one of the etheric states, second, third, first, either, somewhere in there below the astral plane, but invisible to most people. The angel has seven chakras within its form, like a human being does, and a few external ones. But the ones we're concerned with now are the upper head centers in the angel. The lower centers in the angel we'll get into presently. Now, if you were to look at the chakra system in an angel, when an angel secretes a hormone into its system, it creates a reaction. Just like in the human body, we have six endocrine glands that secrete hormones into our body that create a positive reaction, and the seventh endocrine system in the body, when it secretes a hormone, creates damage or does damage, meaning it's a death syndrome hormone, which we try to keep that endocrine gland still. Of course, the gland we're talking about here is the pineal gland. Now, the angel's pineal gland is an externalized gland. It's kept active, but it's not physically located in the angel. The pineal gland of the angel of a particular hive is the queen bee in that hive. And when you begin to understand that this is so, you begin to understand why the queen bee does all the strange kinds of things that queen bees do to make them behave in strange kinds of ways, with a tremendous intelligence over the entire hive, and the whole hive, of course, is subservient to the queen bee. So the angel is vibrating. Now, the queen bee's vibratory frequency, which is that of the angels, is that of the clover, or whatever type of flower that the whole hive is polarized to. So in other words, you'd have clover angels, you'd have orange angels, you'd have alfalfa angels, you'll have avocado honey angels, all these different vibratory frequencies. These are, in fact, denizens of the spirit world that live right on the edge of the physical plane, manifesting energy and consciousness for man to exist. And, of course, a long time ago, man knew this, but man does not exist coincidentally so much with the nature kingdom. For example, when we drop off a hydrogen bomb or an atomic bomb somewhere, think how many beehives are destroyed, these kinds of things. Now, the aura field of the angel extends out to the flowers and back. depending on the polarity of the angel, will depend on what the north and south poles are, and that will be, of course, the angel will be pivoting around the beehive itself. And the bees themselves actually have they're like diodes, they're like rectifiers. What the bees are able to do is they're able to take the energies of the angel and convert them directly into electricity, which then propels their wings. If a scientist were to show you the amount of wing space it takes to fly an airplane with a fuselage proportional to the weight of the center section of the bee would weigh 50 times too much, or it would require 50 times larger wings or wing areas to get off the ground in the first place by normal aerodynamics. Yet with 1/50th the wing size that it requires, the bee flies quite well, because the bee is able to transmit pure energy from the angel, and of course transmit it into itself. Now, if you were to go about 500 feet high above a beehive with a time-lapse camera, and you were to paint every bee with some very bright paint so you could watch its activity during the day, the flowers and back, what you would see after a while is an impression of these time tracks for these bees coming, going to and fro from the hive to the flowers and back. You would actually, paint an image of the angel as it moved around. So you'd have to have different sections of time lapse as the angel moved around and breathed and sensed the different flowers at different times of the day. The same thing, this is really happening. Now, when the honey is made during the dancing process, which is the...
I want to update here also. This was done in 1991, this statement of bee kingdom. And it had been given to me by Sumyasi from the Pleiades. And in 1992 or 3, at the University of Hamburg in Germany, this was actually done. A large tower was erected over a beehive in a area where they had, in their biology area, where they had animals and all kinds of things. And so they actually went in with a non-toxic day glow paint and put that on the bees while they were sleeping at night. Not enough to disrupt their energies, but enough to track them by camera, video camera, during the day. And so as a result of that, in the slow motion photography, they were actually to record one of the first angels as the bees moved around. Of course, it formed the pattern in the aura. So I'll let this continue on. I just wanted to add that, thinking that's interesting.
You have side effects, side products, I should say. One thing is the propolis. Propolis is something that is shed off of the bee, and it's a lower frequency part of the angel's presence, and it's great for drawing energies, meaning that the propolis is used to draw out poisons from the outside of the body, like if you get a sore or cut or something. Of course, the honey is a very high source of energy. It's a pure form of sugar, but it's 6-carbon atom base, so it doesn't turn into alcohol in your body, so it's a natural form of sweetener. And then the royal jelly, which is kept around the queen bee for her food, is the highest essence of the angel frequencies themselves. And royal jelly should be consumed homeopathically, meaning that it's so pure that just to eat large amounts of it is destructive to the body. You should eat it in moderate amounts and you should be sensitive to it. In order to really receive it properly, you should have a fairly clear body. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that the bees, when they go back and forth, if they... if they're bothered, or an animal gets in the way, or a human's out there, they'll have a tendency to sting, even at the sacrifice of their own life, supposedly, anything that's interfering with what they're trying to do in their path of service to the angel and the beehive. Now, of course, right away, when they sting something, they die. But that doesn't matter to the bee, because he knows that his soul is in the aura field of the beehive, and so his little soul, the essence of his soul, is then transmitted right back into the hive, and the bee is reborn again somewhere in some of the eggs of the other bees that are laying eggs for that purpose. So if you were to realize that the energy field that allows the bee to reincarnate within its hive structure again, the consciousness of that bee, because that bee is trained, he knows, you know, he's in this. Like, bees aren't just spontaneously born somewhere. They're within their religious aura field of the, that's my term, of the bee kingdom. And, of course, the energy that the bee reaches when he leaves his body is now an astral energy. He transmits astrally via the scalar technique back into the hive, and he's reborn through etheric, through the physical plane, and born again, going through the angel's aura field. So now you can look at two human beings and say, well, the interplay between two human aura fields, as we said earlier, creates the astral plane. And the interplay between a lot of human beings and the astral plane creates a religious domain. You can see the same thing happening now around the bee kingdom with angels creating the, pretty much you might say, their religion. Each hive is the religion of that. So when the bees reincarnate, they're always in the same group. Of course, angels do communicate back and forth, and there are offsprings and offshoots of angel frequencies. They do change and multiply too in the group, in the auspices of the aura of the group oversoul. But it's not what the purpose of the seminar at this point in time is, not to get into how angels reproduce or perpetuate their species, but that could come up at a later time in a different seminar series. Now, all insects are similar to that. Ants, for example, would be another example. They're scavengers. The ants have a queen ant or a main ant. Black ants and red ants are usually at war with one another because they're opposite frequencies. All of the insect kingdom works this way in the higher domains. You get up into the fly kingdom in some of those areas, the flies are less controlled and more at random than, because they're more like, the thing I could do is relate the flies to the grays. They're kind of scavengers, and they go around cleaning up things, and they have to go through a metamorphosis, kind of a time domain built-in system into their DNA that makes them bring, comes from the larva of a worm up into a fly. Same thing with certain kinds of moths, they're that way too. Whereas butterflies, like in the monarch species and the higher frequencies, are more closer to the angel kingdom. So there's a whole lot of, there's a whole hierarchy of different nature spirits that works over the insect kingdom, as is there a hierarchy of different spirits that control, say, an eagle or a raven or an owl. These are the things that you get in touch with, and this doesn't drop, this doesn't change. It's motivating insects and animals, things that move. It goes right into the mineral kingdom. When you get right down into the mineral kingdom, it has a vibratory frequency too that works off a big unit of consciousness, an overall unit of consciousness. And of course, that brings us right up to the crystal kingdom now. Now, we, of course, as you know, work with the Coleman brothers in Arkansas, and we also work with people down in South America. And we bring quartz up into this country because when we're working with our systems, not only is it important to work with the nature spirits on all levels, but it's also important to work with the mineral spirits in the mineral kingdom and synchronize them. Because when you start dealing with the high powers and currents over a long period of time that affects thousands of lives sometimes, like programming up a quad system or a systems three, it becomes necessary to be in harmony with all of the surrounding elements to get the total result that you might be looking for. Now realize that you are in your own domain here playing God, and so you have to be responsible for your own actions of how you use these different delicate kingdoms. Of course, the mineral kingdom, bringing up quartz out of the ground, quartz is the, as Semyazi says, we're talking about clear quartz, is a perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time.
This seminar series is continued on the other side.
On the other side. On the other side. On the other side.
Well, that's fun. It's always usual. And we'll continue on with that part next week, obviously, because it's already 43 minutes into the session. So what I'm going to do is just continue on here live on the microphone. And this, of course, is being recorded. Today it's going to be played later. A little bit more on T. Gale and Hieronymus and the Hieronymus effect. A lot of people have a tendency to assign scalar waves and the scalar wave behavior to an electromagnetic frequency through what's called a Fournier transform. And the true effect of the scalar wave is what creates an electromagnetically oriented energy as one of many of its multiple outputs that it is capable of doing. So the bottom line is that the true scalar wave is not measurable through a Fournier transform at all, but is in fact measurable through the color spectrum of laser spectrography and through the energy itself and through devices that do not work on electromagnetic principles. Primarily, the best way to measure scalar wave is during a healing session when you're actually monitoring a human being. And in this monitoring process of the human being, making biophysical measurements, i.e. Muscle mass measurements from the EMG machine, which measures the electricity of the body, the biofeedback equipment change in the galvanic skin response, resistance is another way, and then it can also be measured through spectral analysis, which is a much more complicated but yet simpler way of doing it, because it can resonate the modulating changes through the parasympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is where most of the scalar wave frequencies can be measured, and if you look at humanity today and all this out-of-control sexual energy where older people are directing their energy towards teenagers and people under age and this kind of thing, which we're seeing on television right now, a lot of it anyway, and it's kind of sad to see that, but that's a misdirection of the parasympathetic nervous system. And this is scalar wave energy going upside down, and of course it's very negative. I had predicted this would happen, of course, in my earlier radio shows, which are available at the BBS archives, all up and down. The first shows that we did early last year and through the early part of spring of last year, a lot of the shows I did on KFOX were rebroadcasted through BBS 20, 25 years later, but so what? The show actually comes out to, about 25 years later. You can actually see where we were then in the early 80s when we did these shows versus where we are now, including all the cover-ups with the terrorists and the terrorisms. So tomorrow night when Steve Barish and I come on, we're going to talk more about the influx of the energy fields that comes from this dimensional time scale change that we're all experiencing now, which is kind of different, and the planetary effects of that, because we are moving into a different energy field wherein the human body no longer receives its waveforms, its growth potential, and its consciousness mantras like it used to. It doesn't come from an internalized, old, worn-out genetic source, which most people think it thought it as having come from. It's now coming from a broadcasted area from a higher dimension by higher guiding beings. And if you're not on that radio frequency, then what happens is you tentatively become lost and you start searching. And it's really unfortunate because our scholastic system here in this country and other countries does not have any allowance in it for raising of consciousness and the way consciousness affects the body, the way the consciousness comes into the body. We have, as of recently, redesigned, Paradigm, my company, makes products that allows the integration of this energy without the initiating disturbance factor of the ELF and the government waves and HARP and all these different things that you hear about and the poisons in the food, which almost all of it is contaminated. All of these things work in concert to segregate consciousness away from the parasympathetic nervous system. So what we are experiencing through Paradigm is that we are finding that even our older generation receptors and projectors, not the large standalones, that's a new product, the holographic projectors, but what we're experiencing now is the fact that the receptors were not working even in solid platinum to the level that we were expecting them to go. In other words, this horrific bypassing biparticle disturbing frequency spectrum of ELF began to put a strain on the nuclear receptor and the small projector. So as a result of that, we redesigned them. And in 2007 in our product line, there's major redesign has taken place, and it was extensive and very costly, but we had to do it, and now we have a new line of projectors and a new line of receptors that look from a distance very similar, but when you get up close and personal with them, you're going to see a lot more detail, a lot of clarification of detail, and a lot more focus. These things are much, much more focused now. And the other thing that made this possible was the programming abilities and the modern CNC technology from the aerospace industry. A CNC machine is a computer machine that actually carves from a program out of solid aluminum or what metal that you choose a mold that can later be used to pour in molten metal such as gold or silver or the metals that we use, or platinum and pyridine. And so as a result of the advancement of this technology and the expenditure literally of millions of dollars by some of my friends to get these newest machines in-house and get them into to usage, has allowed us to bring out this new product line. The receptor is now also, we've changed the bridge. We have a new optional bridge where we actually use a linear accelerating marquee type diamond, which is a square cut diamond that actually moves the energy faster than the round diamonds that we used in the past. However, the older bridges are still available on the newer receptors, but the way to go with the new ones is to get the whole ball of wax with the new bridges on it. The projector, it's redesigned. It's a little lighter and smaller because, remember, it's like two of these receptors hooked together with a special bridge pattern. That's been completely redesigned and made smaller and lighter, and much more clarity has been put onto the pyramid structures on it, and we did change the two, what we call Venusian pyramids. On the top and the bottom of the projector is a small pyramid that was three-sided, and below it, above it, was a gemstone. So the projector, in effect, if those of you had never seen one, had four gemstones on it. And the gemstones were chosen not by the frequency of the chakra system and what its needs were, as are the receptor, but how fast and how much holographic potential, time-shifting energy can you handle. And so we use the frequency vibratory chart between violet and white for these different gemstones. They come standard at no extra charge with a cubic zirconium, which is a natural material. But some people will advance into some pretty specific diamonds. And I'll tell you one thing about the projectors, though. The amethyst is a very good place to have. It's the bottom of the food chain for the wave technology that's used in the nuclear receptor. But it's has a very, very intensive feeling to it, and it's very cool. I think a lot of people like them with the amethyst. I either would go with amethyst, sapphire, or a diamond, depending on what level you want. But the amethyst ones are kind of trippy, because remember we talked about the butterflies seeing into the ultraviolet spectrum, and the ultraviolet spectrum is the astral plane. So this is more of a thing that you would put under your pillow at night or play around on the astral plane, realizing that when you get into the diamond, you're moving up into the crown chakra and you're way above the frequency of the astral plane. So it's a little less specifically emotionally charging, but it's a lot more mentally stimulating. So it depends, and of course the yellow does affect the stomach, so it will be at the top of the emotion food chain when you use sapphires in them. So those are my three favorite colors in the projectors that are worn around the neck. The larger ones, the big standalones, which are the big amplifiers, we always use white in those, and we use a very high-end cubic zirconium that's very, very pricey, but it's included in the price, so you don't have to worry about it. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. And tomorrow we'll be having myself and Steve Barish. We've had, and then from that on, the point on, we're going to have a lot of guests from the Sound Healing Conference that we're all going to be doing up May 11th and 12th up in San Francisco at the Billy Graham Center, the Downtown Center, the Civic Center Auditorium, and, of course, the main seminar hangout will be the Cathedral Hill Hotel, which is located on Van Ness Street in a very nice part of town. It's a very nice little hotel there, and we got special rates. I think the rooms are only like $100 a night, which in today's times for a, you know, probably a four-star hotel, that's not bad. And that's only because they are reserved for the people that are coming to the seminar. They're a very crafty bunch that put this together, Dave Gibson and crowd. So we hope to see you tomorrow night, and well, maybe we'll even do the Hot Rod to Hell again. We haven't left that out purposely. We got lots of people and companies to send up for a little Hot Rod ride, but we just have been so charged with the content. And by the way, David Icke will be coming up later this month. We'll be doing a show with him, so we're looking forward to that. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.